This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The homeless. It's a term that's used very freely in news reports and academic treatments and papers and social welfare agency reports. And as much as it is a good thing to support and initiate efforts to help out and care about the men, women, and children who don't have a place to call home, there can be a danger in that term, the homeless. It can put a convenient label on those people, one that can lead to a greater divide between those who have and those who have not. Michigan Radio News reporter Kyle Norris wanted to look closely at the homeless people in the streets of Detroit and discover small but important ways that people are helping the homeless, stories and lessons that can be found on the streets of many cities throughout Michigan. So Kyle Norris is here with us on Stateside, and she's joined by Megan Takashima, who's with the Corporation for Supportive Housing. It's a national nonprofit dedicated to ending homelessness by setting up permanent supportive housing. Welcome to both of you.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Kyle, I want to start with you. We're going to be presenting a series of your reports, and you really went out on the streets focusing on who is homeless and how people are helping. What prompted you to want to just undertake this and pull this series together?
I did not plan this at all. We got the source for the first story, which is this mobile medical clinic through PIN. So someone contacted us and said, hey, we're doing this in Detroit. Come check it out. And I jumped on. I was like, this is amazing. But I think certainly something is drawing me to these stories. I'm compelled. I guess I want to know who these people are and what their stories are. And I don't think I hear about that in the news. So I want to tell those stories. You know, the other thing is when I'm with homeless people, I have to be real. I don't know, you know, Megan, if you experienced this, but there's kind of no BS. It's very real. I have to be a human first, a reporter second. And I love that.
Why? Why do you have to be?
Because that's what being alive is about, being humans together and sort of knowing that experience. And it pushes me to do my best work, and it pushes me into uncomfortable situations. You know, when I was on the streets of Detroit, I'd never done anything like that. And like, go behind the liquor store and talk to some homeless folks. Mm-hmm. I'd never done that. And it was scary and intense. So, because it pushes me.
Mm-hmm. And Megan, your work with the homeless has been going on for many, many years. Give us a sense, if you can, about how many people are estimated to be homeless in the city of Detroit.
Well, the estimate is about 19,000 individuals who were counted in a system called HMIS, which is the Homeless Management Information System. So these are any people that sought help assistance because of homelessness or risk of homelessness during 2011.
Give us an idea, if you can, just who these people are. And we're certainly talking about families, and we're talking about little children. Give us a sense of that.
Well, so I think, and I don't want to say that there are only two groups of people mm-hmm. who are homeless, but a lot of times you have families or individuals who are down on their luck. Maybe they've lost their job. Maybe their unemployment has run out and housing is no longer affordable for them. So they're at risk of losing their housing. And then I think you have a group of generally what we call the chronic homeless individuals. Mm-hmm. Individuals have been homeless for a long time on end, have spent, you know, numerous nights in a shelter, maybe more than a year. And those folks generally have more challenging difficulties in addition to their homelessness. So those may be individuals who have substance use disorders or mental illness or, you know, significant physical disabilities or some combination of the three. And treating them and getting them into housing and keeping them to housing is more challenging.
I vividly remember in the early 90s when there were great cuts in benefits, and also when the hospitals to care for the mentally ill closed. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of talk about the safety net springing holes and people slipping through. What's the state of the safety net today in 2012?
Well, I think we still face a lot of the same challenges. I think, you know, particularly as you mentioned, for people who have a severe and persistent mental illness, it's very challenging for folks who even have some income coming in through Social Security benefits to keep housing, both because it's unaffordable. Yeah. The standard Social Security benefit for someone who receives Social Security insurance or SSI is about $700 a month. So that's not a lot to work with when you're trying to obtain housing. And then the other challenge is that for people who have been homeless for a long time, they need services, and they need services in their home in order to be able to maintain their housing. So without an access to subsidized housing and the services to stay successful in housing, they're oftentimes returned to the street or they're not able to secure housing on their own.
I want you both to answer this question. I'll start with you, Kyle, because I can tell this was really an important experience for you personally, being out walking the streets, talking to people, really getting to know them. What do you think now, looking back, having worked on these stories, are the biggest misconceptions that the Habs have about the homeless?
Oh, that they're dumb, that they're stupid people. Every time I meet homeless people, they are smart. They're very funny. There's like a wicked sense of humor. The guys and the woman I was hanging out with the other day in the mobile medical clinic were just cracking jokes. And huge generalization, I find homeless people listen to the news. Those guys told me the top news stories in Detroit. They told me news reporters' names. They followed stuff. They were very bright. They were very smart. You know, when I asked, one of the guys had sort of his life philosophy, and I was like, what did you study in school? You know, kind of threw that out there. And he's like, well, I didn't finish high school, you know, but I wanted to study like philosophy. And you could see that sort of in him. So I think that's the biggest misconception.
And Megan, in your work, how would you answer that question?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think there's a lot of misconceptions. But generally, I think I would echo what Kyle says, in that this is a group of people that, you know, for whatever reason, maybe don't have access to the things that you and I have, but they're not that different than you and me. Mm-hmm. And really all they're looking for is to be treated like anyone else.
I would get the sense, and having done some reporting in the past and kind of similar stories to what Kyle had done, that when we talk about the haves and the have-nots, that gap is not such a big gap. And I dare say for many people listening who have a home and have a job, it's a very slippery slope, and it doesn't take much in the terms of paychecks lost and suddenly income goes away, where suddenly that slope is very slippery and you're sliding down and you can't get back up. Is that true? I mean, as far as that sense of the gulf is not as large as people might want to think.
I think it is true. And I think, you know, what we saw during the last few years when Michigan was really struggling economically is that we saw a greater number of people who were homeless or at risk of homelessness, just because, you know, the access to employment was no longer there. A lot of people were laid off. So you saw people that, you know, maybe had a comfortable middle class life, mm-hmm. who are now facing homelessness just because they didn't have the funds to make ends meet.
Kyle, I want to ask you about your first story. You wrote along with this team of students from Wayne's Med School. What was that like?
It was intense, and it was also really fun. Like, it was just really fun. The young med students were bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I mean, they were, like, alive and really present. And they worked with a nurse practitioner from a homeless center. And so he was sort of guiding them. But we hopped in this van, and we rumbled down Michigan Avenue, and we were like, looking for homeless people. And we would pull over and ask people, like, how you doing? Like, do you need anything? Like, we have some medical people. Can we give you a checkup? Do you need a health kit? And I have never done anything like that as a reporter or just in my life. It was wild.
So give me an idea of some of the people you met.
Well, we met three people behind a dumpster. They had their tent right on I-94, and that's where they lived. The med team tried to approach a young prostitute on the corner. She had to be early 20s, and she said she did want some services, but then she had to leave with a John. You know, so that was – I've never been around that. That stuck with me. That was really intense. They tried to grab another guy, and, you know, and they're always saying, hey, we have, you know, medical people here for free, you know. And the guy said, you know what, I'm dying. I'm going to die soon anyways. My medicine costs – you know, $500 a bottle. Why? And he walked away. You know, so you kind of come up against that, too.
Megan, I'd like your thoughts, if I could. Can you compare and contrast the experience of being homeless throughout Michigan? Because certainly it's not a problem confined to Detroit. Mm-hmm. You can find homeless people in Ann Arbor. You can go to Traverse City. Can you compare and contrast the experiences?
Well, I think, you know, there's the urban experience, and of course that varies from place to place. An urban Ann Arbor experience might be different than one in Detroit. And then you have a rural experience, mm-hmm. where folks are very far from, you know, available shelters, or there's not a shelter in that area.
So what would they do?
So for people who are homeless in those areas, there's a coordinated system of care through the different counties, and it's mm-hmm. sort of a complicated process to describe that. Yeah. But essentially, if shelters aren't available, they're able to produce funds to keep people in hotels until they're able to assess their situation and try to get them into housing. But yeah, the challenges are definitely different. I mean, for example, there's a high vacancy rate in apartments in Detroit. Detroit, so it's not that hard to find an apartment for a person. It's really piecing together the finances. While in the rural communities, you may find more NIMBYism. We don't want these folks in our community, or the challenges of just finding suitable housing because there's not as much available housing stock.
Let's talk about the little picture sense. And mm-hmm. I bet you've got some insights now that you've had your mind open, Kyle, by your experience. What do you think we as individuals can do to help with this problem in our communities?
Well, you know, that all three of my stories sort of focus on that. They have like an individual doing this mm-hmm. tiny little thing that is making maybe a small difference. But that's, I don't know, that's kind of the way I wrap my head around it. I guess my sort of thought is find a way that's sort of true to who you are to do your little thing to help. Like one of the women in my stories, she's an interior designer and she remakes a homeless shelter. She sort of revamps them and reorganizes mm-hmm. them, does a home makeover sort of, and that's her thing. Maybe your thing is showing up to a soup kitchen, or maybe it's something totally different, not directly involved. Like find your tiny way that's true to you that can be of service.
Megan, your thoughts?
I think this is a challenging one because oftentimes, you know, particularly in Detroit, you'll see people on street corners mm-hmm. asking for money, and you don't know if they're homeless, you don't know what they're going to do with the money, and if it's really going to help. What I would say is do some research on the organizations that are helping people who are homeless in your community, and either consider donating your time or your money to help those organizations that you know are doing the work successfully.
I'm going to end with you, Kyle, with wondering aloud, what do you hope our Michigan radio listeners are going to take away from your series?
I just hope they listen with open ears. I guess I can't say what effect they'll have or what they'll feel, but just listen.
Listen. And the first of Kyle Norris's three stories will be running tomorrow on Stateside. Kyle Norris, Michigan Radio News, and Megan Takashima of the Corporation for Supportive Housing. Thanks for joining us on Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.